Hey everyone, welcome to the Charge Podcast. Today I have my friend Colleen Bordeaux back on the podcast. You were on over a year ago, which is crazy, episode 89. So we'll definitely link that up in the show notes for all of you guys who haven't listened to that episode, but so much has changed in your life. You moved. I feel like your career has changed. You completely renovated this house that you're living in. And I also feel like you're always working on a new and exciting project. So we have a lot to talk about.
I'm so excited.
You're the best.
And likewise, I feel like it's always so fun to just catch up on your life. Because like every week there's something exciting happening.
Every week something new.
Yeah.
That's the best way to live.
So true.
For those listening who haven't listened to your first episode that you were on, can you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay, I genuinely don't even know how to answer this question anymore, in full disclosure. I am a free spirit, living my best life would be how I would start this. But I work in the human experience space, which right now means cultivating human experiences and cultivating belonging through corporate America, and also working with individuals, helping them develop skills like confidence so that they can show up as their highest, best, most authentic self, no matter where they go. And I have been working with Deloitte Consulting for almost 9 years now. I completed a sabbatical since we last talked for 6 months, worked with the Art Institute of Chicago and the Second City to look at social and emotional intelligence. How do you cultivate that in adults and in the workforce? And have brought that back to my firm. And I'm working in a very kind of flexible work arrangement with them to figure out how do we help make work better for humans and help cultivate more positive human relationships in the workplace. And then I've also launched a couple of startups that are kind of also working in that same space.
And you wrote a book.
I did write a book. So I feel like the last chapter of that book was all about releasing your need to control everything in life and taking leaps of faith in yourself and in what you're drawn to. And I feel like the past year since we talked, I've kind of lived out that last chapter of my book of just going all in on taking my life a day at a time and trusting what I'm drawn to and releasing all the fear. And it's amazing what happens when you do that.
That is incredible. Oh my gosh. I was trying to remember, when did you go on your sabbatical?
So I started it late January of 2020.
So then that was after we first recorded.
Correct. Yeah.
And then you are not on that anymore. Is that correct?
Correct. I took 6 months. So I got back from my sabbatical in August. And obviously the world changed dramatically since I started that. I proposed my sabbatical for two reasons. The first was I've been doing all of this research for my firm on how work is changing so quickly, right? We're all moving into these like distributed virtual environments. Technology is taking on work that, you know, we're used to humans doing. So it was changing the skills that we need. We need to be able to have cultural fluency. We need to be able to be creative and take risks and problem solve and communicate effectively and have empathy for other people and lead with empathy for other people and how we show up at work. And I was studying this and talking at conferences and advising my clients. And I was looking around like, these skill gaps are like alive and well everywhere I look. And nobody's really doing anything meaningful about it, even though the World Economic Forum was calling it like one of the most critical workforce issues of our time. So when I thought about who is doing stuff around this, like who's actually teaching people how to like let go of fear and connect, like Second City came to mind, all about improv and like just letting go and having fun and yes anding other people in your life. Mm-hmm. And the Art Institute, same thing. So I never in a million years would have thought that I could come back to my firm and say, hey, here's what I learned about using art and using comedy and using creativity to cultivate better connections. But the world changed. We need this now more than ever. And that's kind of what I've been working on.
Wow. I want to know, how did you first propose this to your company? Like, what exactly did you say? And what was their initial reaction? And also, what did it look like communicating with them on a daily, weekly, monthly basis? Or was it kind of a 6 month complete pause and they gave you that 6 month time?
Yeah. So the proposal process was really twofold. First, I talked this over with my husband and my family. And it took a lot of planning on our part because to take 6 months off. I still got a little bit of my pay, but that's like a big financial planning conversation.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think you take a 6 month sabbatical if you're not in a place of like deep reflection on what you're doing and where you're going. And so we wanted to make sure that if I got approved to take this and I did it and it came out at the other side feeling like I wanted to take a totally different direction with my career, we weren't going to be making any decisions out of like financial need. It was going to be about where I wanted to go next. So had those conversations and got to a place of like, okay, I'm ready to do this. I'm going to do it either way. And I'm going to propose it to my firm and see if it's an option first. So I just connected what I felt like I really wanted to do, if it were all up to me, to that future work kind of issue space, social and emotional intelligence in the workforce space, and proposed it to say, if I am able to go and think deeply on this and explore this, we have the opportunity to potentially grow ourselves and our culture as a firm and better serve our clients. And so I was received with open arms. It was so wonderful. I was scared to do it. I think when any time you take a risk like that, it's a little bit scary, but yeah, it was great. And then I was gone for 6 months. It was basically like, here you go. Good luck. Call us when you're done. And that was it.
Wow. So you chose the 6 months then too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So what was it like reaching back out to them?
So also terrifying, because even though my business need, like the need to really explore how do we develop social and emotional skills in the workforce was what I proposed the sabbatical focus. My personal focus was that I loved my job. I love my firm, but I felt like I had to fit in these very narrow parameters of my role, and I had to kind of fit a mold to belong at work. And it was very stifling. I didn't even like tell anybody at work that I wrote a book. I got like the compliance sign off, but I felt like my, you know, super smart, super driven colleagues would not respect my free flowing creativity and my sense of humor, all that type of thing. So after George Floyd was murdered and the world had this kind of awakening around social consciousness, I put a lot of thought into like myself and my blind spots. Like how have I been so blind and carrying all of this bias with me? And also recognizing, how is it that I have felt like I don't belong and I'm afraid to be myself at work, and I am the most white privileged like prototype you can find. I check so many boxes. I've been so well supported in my career. If I feel this way and I check so many boxes of the mold, there's going to be so many people that are in pain and suffering and feel deeply out of place. And so if I don't do something about this, then like who will? So I really put a lot of thought into how do I use my return from sabbatical conversations to shine a light on this topic area of belonging and kind of push the conversation with my research. So I just told that story to my firm, like, look, you think I'm so great, but like, I've been afraid to be who I am here. And if I feel that way, a lot of people feel that way. Give me some white space to explore it with you. And yeah it was, I thought I was gonna get fired, but the opposite happened. They're like, okay, great. Tell us what you want to do.
Oh my gosh. So how did your role change? Like, do you still report to the same people? Is it just a completely new experience at work?
Yeah, it's a completely new experience right now. And it's been kind of an ongoing process, because I thought what was going to happen was that somebody was just going to see how genius this idea was and be like, great, here's like the box you fit in, go run with it. But instead, I think I realized that I've been given the white space, and I came back in a flex work arrangement, given the white space to figure out kind of who is already focused on researching this area? Where do we already have like tentacles into kind of the culture of belonging and positive human experiences realm? And then go find those people and bring this like small piece of what you've learned and figure out how do you make it bigger. And so that has been the most, I think, educational process of my career, because it's really about building consensus and relationships in a totally new way than I had ever done before. So I started working with our chief experience officer within the firm, who's doing a ton of work on the customer experience front and recognizing how we as humans, whether you're a customer or a worker in this world, we have the same expectations of organizations, right? Like we want to show up and be treated like a human. We want to be seen as who we are and not part of some big homogenous group. So really kind of getting connected into that research. And I'm working with like a bunch of different groups right now. So coloring outside of the lines in every way, shape and form. And I still don't know exactly what that like looks like in a box. I'm out of the box.
Mm-hmm. My mind instantly goes to Brené Brown and Oprah. Who are some other mentors that you found?
Like aside from Brené and Oprah, like are there other mentors available? No, I was kidding.
Exactly. How?
You know, I feel so fortunate, and I don't know if you feel this way, but like you have these people that come into your life that just think very differently. And so I think I started to recognize that the people who I know and who I don't know, right, that the work, their work, it really interests me. And why is that? And I started to recognize like the common theme was like this like deep sense of purpose around something. And also this little bit of this like effort attitude, like this is what I'm doing, like come on board and help figure it out. And if that's not okay with you, then I'm going to like steer in a different direction. And there's something so empowering about finding those people and finding those role models in women, because I think we often are groomed to do the opposite, like do as you're told, be nice to people and be likable. So, yeah, I could probably list like 25 people that in my firm and in my personal life and like authors, et cetera, who've helped me kind of.
That's amazing. Is there anyone in particular that you really want the people listening to know about?
Jenny Westerkamp is a great example.
Jenny, we love you.
We love you, Jenny. Well, Jenny is somebody who really helped push me over the hump of, kind of fear of what other people might think. And I think working in a traditional corporate environment where you're literally incentivized to live according to whatever expectation there is of your role, to get past that was like this big leap for me. And Jenny is somebody who really pushed me past that. And I think embodies that attitude of like, this is what I'm doing. And like, if you don't like it, that's okay, because there's others that will.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm so glad you mentioned Jenny. Jenny, I know you're listening. You're amazing. I actually wanted to talk a little bit about Jenny and your relationship, because I know you guys do that accountability calls. What's the name that you guys have for it again?
Peak Performance Partners.
Peak Performance Partners. I love that. When did you guys start that?
So Jenny and I were in the same sorority in college, and we always appreciated and liked each other, but we were never really, really close. And one of our mutual friends got married a few years ago, and I was in this space in my career where I was like, okay, I'm stifled. Like the best parts of me and my creativity and like my passions, like don't have a place in what I've built. And so I was already in that space and like very unclear about what to do about it. And then I chatted with Jenny at that wedding, and she was casually talking about what she was doing with her career. I knew she had like started a business and she was working in like the nutrition space. But then all of a sudden she started to casually mention these things, right, that she does. And I was just mind blown. And so I like basically drilled her with like 1,000 questions at this wedding. And I was like, you need to teach me to basically be you. Like, how do I go from like where I am right now with this like inkling of an idea and actually like build it into something like you did? She's like, well, let's just like talk, we'll hang out. So we started to like go on like friend dates. We'd like go to mass and like get brunch and talk about like our hopes and dreams, and started to recognize that we had these like complementary lenses on the world in like different ways, but like we could work together in a more intentional way and help get our mindsets past old ways of thinking. So a couple years ago, and then we just started to do it like every week, and we would force ourselves to pick something to work on that week and then challenge each other's thinking. And we got to this agreement of like make each other uncomfortable. Like every time we talk, we like kind of make each other uncomfortable. We're like,
really?
Jenny will be like, Colleen, like you already know what I'm going to say. So like, why don't you just think about that for a second? Like, is that really what you mean?
Oh,
is there
my
a
gosh.
Different way to think about this? And then I'll do the same thing for her. And she'll be like, fine. But you need those people in your life. Those like pushers.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been a pusher.
Wow. Can you give an example of something that she helped you work through?
Yes. So my book would not exist if Jenny hadn't been there to kind of like push me over the edge. And one of the things I really struggled with was getting all the way to the end of the process. Like actually writing a book in and of itself is very fun, right? It's like there's so much creativity that goes into not just the writing, but like how do you figure out the whole process? There's like a design process and there's a lot to it. But then when it actually comes down to like setting your publication date and putting this thing into the world that you've created, and you have no idea, right? Like how it's going to be received. Aside from like my editor and the people who I had invited to like blurb the book and get involved in the review process, I had no idea. And I had this like debilitating sense of fear, like the moment before it was like, get it all lined up and press go. And I was like, what's going to happen? In my mind, this was telling myself, what's going to happen is like, everyone's going to hate it. Then they're going to hate me. And then I'm probably going to get fired because this is an embarrassing project that like I just did by myself and told nobody about. And then my career and my life will be over. And that's that. That's what's going to happen. So like, you know how your mind will do those loops on you? So I called Jenny and I knew, right, that she would talk me out of it because this is, you know, my own old thinking. And Jenny literally said to me, she's like, yeah, maybe that will all happen. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Everyone hates your book and you get fired from your job. Then, first of all, at least you like made that investment in yourself and took a leap of faith in yourself and tried. And secondly, like you shouldn't be working at a place that is going to fire you for prioritizing your creativity in a passion project. So either way, like you're going to win. And if one person finds value in it, then do it. And it was just exactly that like little push of hope that I needed and got me over the hump.
Wow.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to read that book, by the way. It's so good. You were so vulnerable in it too.
Thank you. Brené, you know.
We love her.
Yeah. She's helped us all become shameless. Literally.
That's true. What's a limiting belief that you've worked through recently?
Let's think about this. A limiting belief that I've worked through recently. I think one of my like deep fears, like many women, is being disliked. And one of the limiting beliefs that I've had is that it's possible to be liked by everyone. And that is something that just straight up holds you back. So I don't even like everybody. So how is it possible for everybody to like me? Right. And so letting go wholesale of the need to be liked and resting in like who I am, the value that I bring, my innate worthiness, and showing up as like my best self, that's enough. And the people that I'm meant to serve will find me and vice versa. And the ones that don't like me, that's okay. No harm, no foul. There's 7 billion people on the planet.
That's a good one. I really like that flip too, in terms of like, I don't even like everyone. Like, how can I expect everyone to like me?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I really want to dive into the growth incubator that you started. So maybe for sharing what it is and also what inspired you to create this space.
Yeah. So in my process of writing my book, I shared a lot about it on Instagram and introduced this concept, Peak Performance Partner, that Jenny was playing in my life and gave some like examples along the way of how she was helping push me past my own limiting beliefs and my own kind of ceiling on my thinking. And by the way, the Peak Performance Partner concept came from this awesome book called The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy, which is all about the like micro decisions you make on a day-to-day basis are either like building something and taking you towards something, or they're destructing something and taking you away from like where you want to go, which is a really radical concept, but also so true when you think about your day-to-day behaviors and day-to-day habits. So long story short, I got so many questions on like, how do I get a peak performance partner? Like, this sounds great. I needed Jenny. And so I had just like filed that away. I'm like, I don't know, like make new friends. Right? Like I didn't know how to answer that, but I was so focused on like, I'm going to write my book and do my thing. And then as I was thinking about this like last chapter that I was living out, right, which is all about taking leaps of faith. And I think it's getting over fear and living your life at kind of this higher level of thinking beyond fear, and recognized that the number one most effective thing for me was having somebody that was keeping me accountable to that like higher version of myself and that higher version of how I talked to myself and like led myself and guided myself through my life. And thinking about all these questions I had gotten through the process of like, how do I get a partner that does this for me? And this community of people that I had kind of built around myself that I'm like, I don't want this to be about me. How do I connect them to each other and figure out how to serve there? So it was just kind of this kind of moment where I was like, you know what? I actually think that if I can take these awesome people that have kind of come through the filter of like what I've been putting out in the world and connect them to each other and match them to partners and to small groups and give them a little bit of guidance to kind of run with this. Like, why can't they do this for each other? And so that's what like started it all. And I realized also that my problem, my deep core problem that I think so many women have, mine was really about confidence and like lack of self-belief. And it's one thing to work on your confidence and your self-belief by yourself, but like it requires you to take action that demonstrates faith in yourself. And to keep taking action that demonstrates faith in yourself, you have to have increasing levels of courage to do it. And you need to have kind of that cattle prod along the journey with you to keep you going. So that's where it started. I did tons of research on like positive psychology and like what is it that like made my peak performance partnership so effective? And how can we think about replicating that for people that maybe don't have a baseline friendship, but have complementary goals? And how do we structure the way that they interact so that they're both getting something out of it on a week over week basis? Mm. So that's where it came from.
Mm. It's funny because I had Kelly Cook, who you've talked to before, help me with these questions. And something that she really wanted to know was about how when you first did a newsletter about the Growth Incubator and went on IG and literally got no responses, like what did you do to then evolve or like change it at all? Like, how did you go from like literally getting no one to really respond to like have this be something that so many people are a part of?
So I think it's all about listening, right? And I think that one of the things I recognized was that getting more specific on what we're really working on, which is kind of what I was talking about, that self-belief thing. And I think it was self-belief and thinking about who actually is hurting because of a lack of self-belief right now. And where do I have something to offer that's like connected to my story? And I recognized a lot of the questions, and I also got a lot of questions from people about it. They were like intrigued, but like, how do I think about using this in my day to day? And so many of them were also coming from kind of corporate paths. And so I really recognized this opportunity to work on this in a really specific way and connect it to an area where I think we're not really serving women in as meaningful of a way as we could be. So there's so much out there on like how to be an entrepreneur and how to start your side hustle, but like, how do you actually grow your career as a woman and navigate, especially as you get through like mid-career, those like micro moments that seem innocuous, but can make or break whether you kind of continue on and build a path where you're taking on more responsibility and more leadership and more fulfillment or not. And so I really kind of just listened and asked questions and kind of took it from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, you mentioned entrepreneurs. Is it mainly entrepreneurs or people starting something?
So it's mainly women in academia and in corporate America that are essentially kind of at a place where I was a few years ago, which is like, this is not super fulfilling to me. I'm not convinced that my answer is to like jump ship and like start my own business or like go work somewhere else. I need to get clarity on like where I want to go and like what my North Star looks like for my career and also build the courage to do something about that. So that's been kind of the core kind of need. There's a few people that have started like small businesses or started a creative project and they're trying to figure out how do I kind of build more confidence in myself to take that to the next level. But that kind of core, like how do I really get clarity on where I'm going and the confidence to run with it.
Mm-hmm. What questions do you give them or what tools do you give them to really navigate this space?
So are you familiar with Martin Seligman's work?
Mm-mm.
He is a psychologist at UPenn and he's kind of a pioneer in positive psychology. And so one of the things that Martin and his research pioneered was this concept of change talk, that if you want to do anything differently, if you want to make any change in how you operate, you have to have both rational and emotional reasons for that and have to connect it to a bigger why. Otherwise, you're not going to make any progress. So there's a formula that's actually called change talk that really looks at three things. It's number one, like why is this thing that I'm saying I want to do like positive and productive, right? How is it connected to something where in a direction that I really want to go, and it's positive in the sense that it's actually like taking a step forward and getting me closer to that. And then How am I empowered to do it, right? Like, what do I have within my agency to actually do something about it? So the model is really kind of two interactions a week. The first partners get a prompt on Mondays where they are essentially asked to choose one thing for the week that's going to get them kind of closer to this. We call it inner narrative, but it's like, how do you talk yourself into a place of self-belief? How do you talk to yourself from a place of confidence? So like, think one thing that week that demonstrates your investment in yourself and that inner narrative you want to solidify, and then really focused on like, what are those emotional, rational reasons for like why you need to do that? And then the partners meet, they work on that with each other. They keep each other accountable over the week. And then they get a reflection at the end of the week that is really focused on this concept of invisible currency. And this is something that was really a name I gave to those things that you do that you don't get to put on a resume, you don't get to brag about, but are things that genuinely move you forward in your own confidence, in your own self-belief, like saying no to something, or like getting yourself out of an obligation, or prioritizing an hour of your day to like focus on something just for you. And tracking those things is important because it gives you the ability to look back and be like, actually, I'm doing so much that I should be proud of that is moving me forward. And I just haven't really been giving myself enough credit.
I love that invisible currency.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Oh my gosh. Also, I know that you have to apply to be a part of the growth incubator, right?
Yes.
How does that work?
So it's essentially wanting to weed out, and this, I'm saying this in full disclosure, I want to weed out anybody that isn't there for the right reasons, meaning like, I want to be part of this because I genuinely am like invested not only in like developing myself and my self-belief, but also have something to bring to the community, and I'm invested in helping other women do this for themselves too. And so the application process is also focused on helping to set expectations around what is involved, because there is a time commitment. Mm-hmm. And back to the like no responses, one of the things I learned is that there's quite a few people who like understand this concept and see the benefit of it, but didn't necessarily think they could commit to a partner. But what they really needed was like one-on-one coaching. So I've also in the application process brought on a few individual coaching clients, including a couple moms who are like, how can I do this in like 5 to 10 minute chunks a day? So we have like a text coaching model that has come out of this, which is literally so awesome, because it's like, how do we get you started, but keep it manageable and keep you focused on like little micro decisions? Mm-hmm. A couple of examples is like one woman who is fabulous, super busy professor, mom of two. She was trying to find more capacity for herself. So we like, okay, what are your obligations that are literally not moving the needle on what you really want? And she found a couple and she's like, I really want to quit this thing. So I decided my thing this week is to just quit, give my notice, and I'll be done by the end of May. I'm like, why can't you be done by the end of next week?
Exactly.
So she's like, oh, okay. And then there you go. Right. So it's like those tiny little things. Yeah. So it's been really fun. It's like a learning process for me and like really rewarding to see this, you know, help others and kind of organically grow. It's not for everybody, but it's like meeting a need that I am excited to figure out how to serve that in a bigger way.
Oh my gosh. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
That's so awesome. Last question on this. If people want to apply, how long should they expect to wait to be accepted or to hear back? Like, do you accept people kind of in chunks? Because obviously they'll have to be with a partner. How does that work?
Yeah. So I have been, having like almost like a 3 to 4 week wait period. And the reason for that is twofold. I want to make sure that I'm growing this sustainably in meaning like I can serve and make this value added to whoever comes into the process. And also want to make sure that I'm like thoughtfully matching people to partners in groups. There's like a assessment period, a personality assessment that I have everybody do. And I do think that there's something to the like matching piece of it that really is important. So about 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay, perfect. You've already talked a lot about confidence, and I know this is something that you are really passionate about. So I'd love for you to share any learnings on confidence that you've discovered within the past 6 months or more.
Yes. First is one that made me really angry and kind of preempted me starting this growth incubator, that women, the typical woman, reaches peak confidence in life at age 9. Which is infuriating.
What?
Isn't that insane?
I wonder how they tested that.
I'll send you the link to the study. But there's also, it was like by the time a girl is, I think it was like 16, wants to change one or more aspects of her physical appearance. And the other stat that I heard that really caught me off guard was women join their careers. And I think this is really looking at it from like a traditional career standpoint. And have aspirations of reaching the highest levels of leadership. And within the first 2 years of their career, they lose that aspiration. So like something's happening when women enter the workforce that is killing their confidence. And so I also saw my story in that, right? That, you know, I went in like guns blazing in my career and something happened where I felt like I can't be me here. And there's nothing that kills your confidence faster than feeling like your highest authentic self doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's so crazy because as soon as you said that number, age 9, literally a memory flashed. I was 10 in fourth grade and like vividly have this memory of being shut down by a teacher. And it's such an interesting story because it was about a test that I took and obviously you get your test back and I was like such a perfectionist. I'm definitely a recovering perfectionist, but I was like, you know, why is this answer wrong? And I like looked at my friend's test and we had like the same answer and the teacher graded hers right, but mine wrong. And I remember bringing it up to the teacher and saying like, hey, why was mine marked wrong? My friend's is marked right. And I don't exactly remember what she said, but it was literally like such a quick shutdown and didn't even bring it back up to me. And like, that's probably the first moment that I ever remember just feeling really unworthy and not confident at all about bringing things back up to a teacher. And it's so wild because as soon as you said that age, I'm like, yes, like I actually remember this moment.
Which is like, how is, first of all, sad for little
so,
you.
Literally so, so sad. And that I still remember this too. So vividly.
Oh, I mean, and when you think about too, the shutdown moments, gotten a couple of comments when I was a little girl and like even throughout my career, like you're too big for your britches. And what's the message there? Like stay small and fit in the britches you have, right? But like if you're growing in life, you got to get bigger pants. And if you're telling women to stay small, that's like fundamentally wrong. And I do think that we are groomed as women or traditionally have been to be likable, to do the right thing, to be the straight A student. The idea of like taking a risk or doing something outside of the box is not necessarily celebrated in women versus like the whole boys will be boys attitude. So I think the whole like gender stereotype thing is very real. And I've been talking about this at my firm on the concept of worthiness at work. So you said you felt unworthy. And so we're in the middle of doing some research on that topic of worthiness and finding some, it's not published yet, but finding some like really fascinating statistics of like how prevalent feelings of unworthiness are in the workplace, like especially with women and underrepresented minorities. And when you think about like what makes you feel worthy, it's like feeling like somebody respects your opinion, that you're listened to, that you have a place at the table. And I think that in a corporate structure, a lot of this is unconscious. Like we have a lot of really good intentions, but if 93% of the leadership is like a white man in a black suit, then there's a lot of people who don't look like that, that I think internalize this idea that they're not good enough as they are to ascend to higher levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I am curious when you're talking about the work that you're doing specifically within your company, is it mostly targeting those top leadership positions and how they're relating to people quote unquote under them? Or is it more so related to literally every single employee and more so working on the inner self-development?
Yeah, great question. So there's a few like threads of this, but I would say like the central thread is that we have to start operating with what we're calling a whole brain approach in corporate America. So in traditional corporate settings, logic is how we make decisions and we don't ever look at emotional data. That started to change as organizations started zooming in on customer experiences, especially with like rise of digital and omnichannel, they started recognizing like, oh, wow, if our customers have a negative emotional experience with us, they're not going to buy again. So we have to figure out like what drives an emotional experience of a customer and how do we design processes and interactions around that information so that we're cultivating really positive experiences every step of the way. And when you think of the brands and the companies you love, like the reason you love them is because they've empathized with you as their customer. They've put your emotional experience with them at the middle. So this taking this idea of what we've done for customers and now do it for workers, thinking about how does a workforce experience their work day on an emotional level? And how do we capture emotional data in order to solve problems in a way that balances what we're doing around logic and like ration, right? And so one of the practices that I've been focused on is really called human experience by design. So that whole idea of like, okay, we're losing people. Okay, let's like, instead of taking a survey, let's actually like take a selection of those people, put them at the center of the problem and like create psychological safety and invite them to share how they're really feeling and what's actually making them feel that way. And then use that to anchor what we're studying and how we're scoping the problem and how we're solving it. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that totally makes sense. Is there anything that you can share that you discovered within your company and anything that you guys were kind of able to flip?
So I think one of the things that is so interesting right now is the power dynamic of like worker to organization is different than customer to organization, right? Like as a customer, you can just like walk with your dollars elsewhere. But as a worker, when you're reliant on a company for your income and it's like such a big contributor to your well-being, I think there's like a lot more that goes into how do you cultivate positive experiences and how do you do it in a way that's respectful of that power dynamic. So while I can't share any like specific like research or data with you, I think this idea that the world is changing and that work is changing really quickly. And we're recognizing that every organization across industry is trying to figure out how do you kind of crack this nut. And so for your listeners that are working corporate jobs and they're like suffering right on endless Zoom calls and feeling super disconnected and disengaged, like I think that's seen and that's like, you know, recognized as a huge issue and we've got to figure out how to work better because it's not acceptable.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. And this brings me to my next question. How do you know when a work environment is unhealthy versus when your perspective may need to change? Because you actually talked about this in the last episode that you were on where you described yourself as a negative Nancy and you just had this like horrible idea about your career when in actuality it was like, no, like you need to do that inner work.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating, I think. Like, how can you distinguish which it is?
Yeah. Oh, it's such a complicated question. And I think totally varies like situation by situation. I was just talking to, I think I told you I was talking to the University of Michigan Center for Positive Organizations earlier today. And we had this exact same conversation, especially for people who are newer in their careers. And what we were talking about was, this idea of, and stay with me for a second because we're going to get to the question, but this idea of like bringing your authentic self to work, that doesn't mean coming to work and just being like, this is the way that I am. Take it or leave it. That's not it. It is like bringing your highest best self, like your most positive character traits, doing everything you can to get those scratchy parts out of your personality so that you are net positive in every interaction you have in the workplace. So I think that if you have genuinely like done the self-work, have the level of self-awareness, say like, I've worked on my own character skills and I genuinely show up as a positive thinker, as a collaborative worker, and I come with my very best intentions. I am above reproach. I don't spend my time gossiping or breaking others down. I'm here to use myself and add value as my highest expression of myself. If you can't confidently say that you've done that self-work and you can answer 1,000% yes, then I think you have to start there before you start pointing fingers at the environment. And I'm going to caveat this with, of course, saying that there's so much happening in the DE&I space around systemic bias, systemic racism, microaggression is very real that I think creates horrible experiences that even if you are doing everything you can, if you are not represented in that work culture and you are like battling that type of challenge, like highest expression of ourself, I think is like a really good starting point for anybody that is in some sort of like negative dynamic. And then I think from there, it really becomes a question of, you know, figuring out who are the leaders around you, either at your level, beneath you, or above you, that are like-minded and also kind of showing up in really positive, productive ways and seeking to make change and finding those people to help guide you on navigating some of those, like, you know, nuanced challenges that may or may not be toxic.
Mm-hmm, totally. If someone is feeling like they are a part of a toxic work environment, but really love most of the company, what is a strategy that you would recommend with how to bring this to the leadership team?
So I'm a big believer of working with the people at the center of the problem with you. Even if you've struggled, there's always things that you can do to adjust and operate a little bit differently. And I actually, when I think about practitioners I work with and people on my teams, as they come to me with issues, like the very first question I have is like, why are you coming to me on this by yourself? Because if you've done everything you can at your level with the people involved with you, then like, this is like a bigger conversation than just you, right? So for me, I think depersonalizing and defanging a situation is really important. If you haven't read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel
Ruiz, so good,
which I think The Four Agreements, just for your listeners that haven't read it, they're essentially, don't take anything personally, right? It's like, develop the self-awareness and the strength of self so that no matter what is said to you or around you, that you recognize it is about the other person and never about you, so that your emotions are not triggered by other people's actions, which I think is such a great piece of advice. The second is, don't make assumptions, which I think we all struggle with, but that idea of like, what is fact? Like, what do I know for sure versus like, what am I assuming that I need to just let go of? And then that idea of being impeccable with your word, meaning like, you speak the truth, you speak in positive, productive ways. You never speak to harm others or speak untruth or drag them down. If you're impeccable with your word and then you seek to do your best always, I think like, that's such a great frame, so simple, but a great frame of like, okay, like, can I be in this space and approach this particular challenge from that frame, and then use language as we're talking about and trying to move forward that builds consensus. And like, a couple great words that I love to use, instead of you're doing Y, X, Y, focus it on like, I'm sensing, right? I'm sensing frustration. I am sensing a disconnect. And I think we can both agree that we've got to figure out, how do we get on the same page to move forward? And then using the Socratic method, which if your listeners aren't familiar with that, it's really about, instead of focusing on what you don't agree to, start with what you do agree to. Like, I think we both agree we got to figure this out. I think we both agree that we're coming to this with good intentions. I think we both agree that, you know, this might be one of the areas of disconnect that we've got to dig deeper on. So I think those are skills that like, you only develop by like actively seeking to resolve a challenge, but I would start there.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I love that you went through the four agreements, because I was thinking in my head, like, what are the four agreements? I know I love them. The one that I always remember though is always do your best, and that your best looks different every single day. And totally. That's totally okay.
Like, sometimes you launch something and like nobody signs up because they're like, I don't understand what you said.
Exactly. And look at you now.
It's also really fun to actually own those moments too. I've recognized like the power of vulnerability and just like sharing your process. Like, part of it is like courage, developing your courage, but to be like, all right, you know what, guys, I did something, it didn't work. And like, I know it didn't work. You tell me why, mm-hmm. and then we'll take it from there.
Let's work together.
Yes.
What is one more tool or practice that you can share related to confidence, courage, unworthiness? What's a tool that you really want to share with those listening?
Okay, so this is going to be woo-woo, but you and I love the woo, so let's just do it. I think that getting in tune with my own intuition has been something that has paid dividends in my confidence, especially in this year where I've taken huge risks with my career. I've been like launching things and really operating out in this white space, leaps of faith every day. And the thing that's helped me the most is like, in, yes, I have goals and yes, I have, you know, things that are like my focus for the week that I'm working on, but really spending my morning, a few minutes every morning, focused on like cultivating gratitude for what I already have and then asking for guidance. Like I'm somebody who's spiritual. I believe in God. Like that's, I don't think it's a requirement that you like believe in necessarily like a higher power, but your willingness to take the focus off of yourself and simply ask like, you know, what would you have me do today? Like, is there anything you'd like me to know? And what do I need to let go of? Framing the question outward versus inward, meaning like it's not all in your control. It's wild to me when I ask that and journal on it, the most like comforting, kind, loving words come to my head. I ask the question, then I write down the first things that come to my head. It's like the biggest confidence builder ever.
Such a good practice.
It's like you love Richard Rohr too. I probably also am like have imprinted myself with Richard Rohr because a lot of times it's like drop the fear, drop the self-loathing, like have fun with it, let it be easy. And there's so much I think we do. We just grip and we get so tight and we just like make things so hard. And sometimes it's just like your intuition just wants you to have fun and to be like free.
Mm-hmm. Free spirit like you yes. are. Oh, Richard Rohr, though, love him so much. One of my goals is to go on a retreat with him so badly. He's getting old, so we really need to make this happen. Okay, before we end, I really want to talk a little bit about moving. You moved to California, which is incredible. What was your intention behind moving?
So my husband and I knew that we were like gonna leave Chicago. We didn't know where. He isn't from there originally and I think was like, you know, we've given this fair shot, time to move on. So we sold our place and rented this tiny little coach house in my high school BFF's yard. And my husband got an offer to come out to California. He works in media. And we were like, you know what? We have nothing attaching us to Chicago. Let's just do it. And so we like literally rented this house over FaceTime, like drove 30 hours in the middle of a pandemic with like our dog and all our plants and like landed in this house.
Oh my gosh.
Which was terrifying. When I first walked through it, I was like, we made a terrible mistake. My husband was like, let's just leave the like, you know, you do like the first last month payment to get it. And he's like, let's just abandon that money and like go get a normal place. I'm like, no, what else are we going to do? I'm like, we literally can't go anywhere. The world is closed and I love DIY. We can make this cute. And here we are.
So you knew that you always wanted to move out of Chicago.
My husband did.
Your husband did.
I had lived out of Chicago and I was like in this space of I can live anywhere. Like mm-hmm. I travel so much for work. There's so many places that I could see myself being at home at. So he is from Southern California originally. He was born here.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah.
And we literally asked the question, this is for anybody in a relationship, the most like straight question you can ask somebody when you're trying to figure out like, where are we going to go and be the happiest? I was like, if I didn't exist anymore, if I wasn't in your life, where would you like immediate first place that you would go? And he was like, LA. I was like, done. Let's go.
Wow.
Give it a year. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to ask Isaac that.
Yeah.
He's actually told me before and it was like Thailand or something. And I'm like,
but Chiang Mai is like so nice.
I've heard. Yeah. But that time change, that would be so hard.
It would be hard. It's hard to be like far from family.
Exactly.
Like, I miss my family. I haven't seen them since August.
Yeah. That must be hard. So, because I remember you were living in Oak Park, correct?
Yes.
So you rented an Airbnb from a friend in Chicago before moving to California?
Yeah. So we were in Logan Square in Chicago and we owned our place there, sold it November of last year, moved into this like coach house in my friend's like backyard, basically in the Oak Park area.
Mm.
And then in May, we came here.
Do you feel like COVID escalated that?
I would say yes, because living in a tiny coach house, like we didn't expect to be like all like on top of each other, but like my husband would like blow his nose and I'd be like, oh my God, it's like so loud. You know what I mean? It just grace on your nose. We need space. Like we got to go. And like, as soon as he like got this offer, we're like, you know, great, let's go. Like next week, let's go.
Wow. That's incredible. What is the biggest lesson you've learned from moving to California?
Biggest lesson I've learned. I think it's a relationship lesson. My husband and I celebrated our 7th wedding anniversary. I was a child bride.
Oh my gosh.
Child bride. But in September. And I think anytime you like pick up your life and go, we were both going through career changes. We were going through like, you know, big life change to move. And I think that that prompted us to recognize that we both were in some ways trying to change the other person. And this idea of like radically accepting what's happening around you and radically accepting your person as they are and like making the choice to be like, you know what? Like, this is not perfect or like not how I would exactly design it, but that also doesn't make it wrong. And to be able to radically accept what's happening and just put yourself in this, like, I choose to respond in like a really positive way. Like, that is a game changer. And I learned that the hard way, because I think I was resisting. I was like, I'm like missing my family. And, you know, there's like so much happening and it's a pandemic and we don't know what's coming next. But that idea of just being like, you know what, you're you, I'm me. Like, we're going to like do this our own way. And it's going to look different than like what maybe everybody else does, but that's okay if it works for us.
How did you have that conversation and what actions did you take to really, truly start embracing Wes as he is?
So, I would say that one of the biggest things is I, as you know, like love like my environment and it's, I like put a lot of like time and thought. I like ritualize everything I do. I like light a candle as I like clean the kitchen, right? And like next level. My husband's like the opposite of that. And he's like, doesn't care about like, you know, being like super organized, clean. So I would spend a lot of energy like cleaning up after him and then like raging about it. Right. And I was like, well, this sucks. Yeah. I'm like, so disorganized. I'm like, if you open the Amazon box, you put the box in the recycling. You know what I mean? And so I was like secretly raging. And then I was like, okay, like nobody's coming over and we can have a messy house. Like that's actually the answer. You can just lower your standards. And so now we have designated mess. Like that room, I was like, don't open the door, Elizabeth, because it's going to like scare you. That's a designated mess room that I'm like, you can do whatever you want. Just throw it all in there and I won't touch it. And I won't ever think about that room. Like in my mind, we have a 2-bedroom, not a 3-bedroom house. And it helps. It literally does. Because otherwise, the other option is like, I silently rage and do all the cleaning. Or he feels like he doesn't have the space to be himself and like live his day-to-day life the way that he wants to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am Wes. So Isaac is you. Like, what do you recommend for my relationship?
So like in that like cleaning up piece, I would say it's really important to sit down and talk about your like daily needs. And that's something that it's actually becomes very specific when you're like, I actually need like room to just like spread out. And I'm not you. I'm not like a super like rigid like thinker or super organized. And I think I can meet you in the middle. And here's what the meeting in the middle looks like to me that still meets my needs. And so I think both people being willing to like flex a little bit and then also asking the like, so what? Like, so what if our house is a little messy? Like what's going to happen, right? Are we going to burn the place down or like attract a bunch of rodents? Like, as long as it's not unsanitary, like I think we're going to be okay. And like Wes and I have like designated like every week on this day, we like go through and we like declutter and we like wipe stuff down and we just like do that on the process and it helps us a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. How often are you having conversations with Wes that involve some sort of relationship growth?
Like every day.
Tell me more.
Yes. So Wes and I are, I would say, like both very intense personalities. So that's both bad and good. It's good because we get everything out. Like there's no questioning like where the other person is coming from. It's and it's a sign that like we're communicating, right? Because I think the alternative, if you're not communicating your needs, then you just become like silently resentful and like wake up at 45 and you're like, never mind, I'm out. Right? So we communicate often, but learning to choose your battles so you're not like always like in a place of conflict is like something we had to really think a lot about. And then positive communication is something we focus a lot of our attention on too. So we always eat dinner together and sometimes lunch. Like if we will review our schedules like the night before. And if we have time to have lunch together, we'll do that. But every night at dinner, we try to use that time not to like manage our house or manage our relationship, but just like connect with each other. And there's something that I keep sharing with everybody because it's been so helpful for us. Wes bought these on Amazon. They're called talking point cards for couples. And they're just like conversation starters, like that like bring you back to when you first started dating or ask you about like big picture goals. They cover like a bunch of different topics, but we try to do like three of those at dinner and then really make sure that like for every negative interaction, we've got like at least five positives that outweigh it. And we laugh all the time too, which is like back
to huge. Yeah.
Right. And if you like also stop, like radically accept the other person and you stop trying to control everything, you just have more fun. Like things are just funnier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we will definitely link up those talking point cards in the show notes. That sounds so fun. What's been your favorite unexpected surprise about moving to California?
I thought I would not like California.
Really?
So my sister lived here when I first graduated from college and I came out. I forget where she was living. I think she was living in like Hollywood. And I just, we had a good time, but I just was like, there was like dog manicure salons and like, this is not my vibe. You know what I mean? But I was a different person then. And I have literally been so surprised how quickly it's felt like home. You said it felt like home to you, right? It's just been so easy to just click into the lifestyle here. And I have never been happier, as rough as this year has been. And it might be California. It also might be like all of the other stuff I've been doing, but I have never been like more like settled in where I am. And like, I can't imagine like a better life or somewhere else I want to be. And that's like very unusual for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to know that. How long did it take you, whether it was weeks or months, for you to really feel like this feels like home, like you said?
Like, weirdly enough, this is going to sound again woo-woo, but let's just go with it. When we were looking at places on FaceTime, this place, even though I was like, this place seems a little bit, you know, ugly. It's going to need some Colleen Bordeaux love. But like, there was something about it that I was like, I don't know, it like checks all of our boxes. Like, and there's like this like extra thing that I just can't stop thinking about it. And I'm a drawer. So I like was like drawing the floor plan and I'm like visioning it. There's something about the house that like when we got here, even though I did like a literally like emergency paint job like day one, and like ripped up all the carpets and like took out every light. No big deal. Just some light rental work. That made it feel like home to me because I felt like I did this like nesting phase. Yeah. And so right away, and like, it's just every day you just walk out sunny. There's like not a cloud in the sky. So sunny. People are genuinely super happy. Like even under the masks, like in Chicago under the masks, there's just kind of like that sadness in the winter. You know what I mean? Like
you
can even like open your eyes all the way. And here it's like smizing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, smizing. Tyra Banks is like smile with your eyes.
Like try it. I need to work on that. Wish you had like a video of that. Yes, I completely feel that for sure. And I think part of it too is just the sun.
Oh, I know.
Like it does wonders. It really does. It's crazy because like today was cloudy and I literally was like, where's the sun? Where's the sun? Like, cause people say, oh, you like, you know, once you live in California, you're not going to be as grateful for it. I'm like, is that really the case? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm still new here. So like, maybe we got to check in like another year. But like, even the palm trees. I'm like, oh my God, look at these palm trees. I keep taking pictures of like cacti. Like I was in Malibu last week and my friend there, we were like taking a walk and she's like, Colleen, like you don't have to take a picture of like every cactus and like every ocean view. I'm like, but I do. You don't understand.
I have to.
Right.
Yeah. How did you decide on this area? Was it because of the house or did you decide on this area, looked at a few houses, chose this house?
So two things. We drew like kind of like a 1.5 mile radius around Wes's office because being like not from LA, we wanted to spend zero time in traffic. Like if he wanted to bike to work, like, or I dropped him off, whatever, we wanted this to be reality, not knowing like if or when the office would open.
Mm-hmm.
We also wanted to be central to our friends. We were fortunate to have several close friends, like childhood friends, family friends, relatives in this area. So we wanted to be like very centrally located to be able to get like, you know, between like Pasadena and Santa Monica and all over the place. So this is like ideal geographic location for us.
Mm.
And then we wanted a single family home because we live in this tiny space. Like we have a dog. And if we had to quarantine again, I wanted to have like outdoor space, separate offices, separate living spaces, like all that. Which really narrows the search. And it's very expensive to live in Los Angeles. I'm also in the middle of this like big career transition where, you know, like we just wanted to make sure we were going to be like thoughtful about it. So this house, and there's like a couple other options that we had. But this house really was like, even though I don't think we would have rented it had we looked at it in person first, turned out to be such a gem. And yeah. I love it now.
Yeah. Ugh. Last question on moving. How did you find friends?
So great question. I make friends easily. I don't know if it's always like a mutually positive interaction because I'm like, I love you and we're friends now. Like, give me your number and I'll text you tomorrow.
Perfect.
So that's my usual go-to approach. But I have a couple really close friends here that have their kind of own networks. And I've met friends through that. And it got, again, in the pandemic, trying to be like thoughtful about social distancing and all that. But yeah, and I feel like also getting out of the box of like what I've been doing day to day also has just opened my aperture on like just connection. So I've also made a lot of people, a lot of friends purely virtually, right? They don't even live in California, but I think really focusing a lot of attention on like who's doing awesome, cool work that I want to learn more about. And I like want this person in my life. You do that very naturally, like through your podcast and through how you just like operate day to day. And I think it's like a really, important skill in and of itself could be a podcast episode on like, how do you just cultivate your network in a really organic way that, you know, adds value to your life and adds value to other people's lives.
100%. Yeah. I actually wanted to know what is a strategy that you can share with those listening that is something super simple that they could do tomorrow if they are feeling like they're struggling making friends.
Yeah. Oh, and I think this is a huge one for so many people right now. Like first, I would say like, think about where your attention goes that lights you up, right? Like who am I paying attention to? Like, what are they doing? Who are they connected with that like I want to know more about? And then I think it's just like taking that first step of like reaching out to that person. And just like, I think most people just love to talk about themselves. It's like human nature. You're like, you have great taste in people because you're right. I am interesting, right? So I think almost anybody, if you express an interest in like their work or what they're doing, is usually pretty open to connecting or connecting you to somebody that, you know, is like in their space if they don't have time to do it. So I think just developing the courage to go first and reach out and ask to connect. I try to hold space in my calendar for that, that like, you know, especially people that are early in their careers and like just starting out and looking for like guidance that just like, yeah, like let's chat. That's how I've made so many connections and so many friends in my career. Like other people paving the way for me.
Everyone reach out to Colleen. She has space for you. All the Charge listeners come crawling to you. Last question that you wanted to answer. You wanted to talk about why 2021 is going to be the best year ever. And I want to know everything about that.
Yeah. Okay. Let me show you my mug. I just got this. It's my mantra. Yes. I think this needs to be everybody's mantra. So if I show it to you, this is an agreement we're all making.
Yes. Yes. I love it. Say it out loud. Say it out loud.
So I am a fucking legend is the mantra for 2021. And I think that as crazy as this year, 2020 has been, I think we have been given this gift of like digging really deep on ourselves, learning to sit with ourselves. And I think that there's this baseline strength that we're coming out of this year with. And so I am telling everybody that will listen to me, like use that baseline strength to like catapult you towards like what you really want to be doing. We've been sitting here for months thinking about like what we actually care about, what matters, what we want, like go do it, like go make that life. It's so accessible. There's nothing to be afraid of. And like, we should all be fucking legends, right?
Mic drop moment, baby. Oh my gosh. I need that mug. That is incredible.
I got this from this store yesterday. It's called Sixth Sense, in Koreatown. And like everything they have is like on brand. I was like, oh my God, I need everything. It's like a gorgeous interior store, but they also have like these like great little quirky things. So I'm not letting myself use this mug until January 1st. Like I'm like all in on this like mantra.
Ooh, I like that.
I had a mantra mug this past year that I've replaced with my like Home Alone mug, but it was can't stop, won't stop. Unless the caffeine runs out.
Oh.
And so this year it's like, yeah, I've already done that. Now it's just channeling this like power Power pose.
Confidence. Oh, love it all so much. Let's end on some rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I'm never ready for these. You did this last time, and I think I was just like
new,
slacked
these
on.
These are new questions too. Okay. So get ready. Favorite quality about yourself?
My creativity.
Three current favorite Instagram accounts.
Rebecca and Genevieve. She is this awesome interiors blogger. She has like this old house in Southern California, like a 60s house. Everything she does is budget. And then you're like mind blown. She has marble countertops that she made out of contact paper. I'm like obsessed with her.
Wow.
Yeah. Obsessed. 1,000 times better. Do you know that account? I look at all decor stuff. Kirsten Blazek, she's an interior designer in LA. And like, this is a chapel in Scotland. Look at that ceiling. It's like incredible.
What?
Yeah. It's like everything she puts out there just blows my mind. It's just very unique. Like not like any other, nothing beige about it. And then Tanya Markle, who is a writer. I think she's a Danish writer. But she had this quote I shared on Instagram a few weeks ago that was, every time I catch myself asking for permission, I vomit a little in my mouth.
Enough said.
Enough said. She's just good energy. Tanya Markle.
Oh, okay. Love that. What's the best book that you've read this year?
The best book that I have read this year was probably How to Love by Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh,
it's very short. I read it at the exact moment that like, I think everybody started to feel like the fever pitch of like the election and like just like all of the animosity and all of the strife in the world. And I was feeling like deeply, like, I don't know, like deeply sad. And that book, I think, gave me a lot of comfort around just your own agency and how do you show up with love and lead with love in your life and like everything that you do. It talks about it from like a romantic sense as well as from like a general orientation sense. It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's so short, which is so nice too. Yeah. What about favorite documentary that you've watched this year?
Favorite documentary that I have watched this year. This one I didn't watch this year, but I think it's very timely right now, is True Cost. Did you ever watch that one?
Mm-mm.
It's basically looking at our culture of consumerism and the true cost of like, why is it possible that you could go to Old Navy and buy jeans for $10 when like minimum, that's like minimum wage, right?
Wow.
And you know, it doesn't take a person an hour. So it zooms out and looks at it through two lenses, like the cost of essentially making people feel as though they are wealthy because they can afford to buy a lot of stuff, but then they don't need it. They get into credit card debt. They're in a really bad financial situation, like the debt crisis in America and like what consumerism is doing to us from that angle. But then it also looks like who's actually making these like $10 Old Navy jeans. And it goes into like the factories in Bangladesh and what's happening in India and just like the, not only the human cost of it and like what it's doing to people that are working in this globalized economy for very low wages under very poor conditions, but also the impact it's having on the environment. And it changed my whole paradigm. I don't buy cheap stuff anymore. Like I will buy a dress and I will wear it for years. And I'm okay doing that. I'm like, I have a pair of $700 shoes, but that's because I haven't bought seven pairs of $100 shoes over the past couple of years. I'll buy one pair and I'll wear it for a really long time. It's an inspirational documentary. It changed my spending, change my whole like orientation towards like what I introduce into my life.
Wow. I'm definitely going to watch that.
Sorry. Like,
that's
really
incredible.
Intense.
No. Yeah. That, I mean, that's so needed.
So needed.
So needed. Wow. What's a dream you have that you haven't really talked to anyone about?
A dream I have that I haven't talked to anybody about. Okay. So I, in addition to the growth incubator, started this design business and I have genuinely, I have this belief that like the physical environment that you are in every day affects how you feel and how you think about yourself. And so I genuinely think that there's something to teaching people how to design their homes to support their own well-being and their own fulfillment. And like, there's like, I think a television show that's going to come out of this. Like, I genuinely think like Marie Kondo teaching us how to organize our life, there's like, and I don't necessarily know it's going to be me doing it, but I think that like there is something to be said for not going out and like buying all of West Elm and making your house look like everybody else's, but like cultivating like your well-being, your authentic well-being through how you design the space around you to reflect your highest self back to you. So there's something there.
I love that. It's crazy because literally when you, right when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, like your next book. But then I'm like, no, wait, I love the idea of a TV show way more.
Or both, right?
Both.
But I think
I love that.
I've been thinking about how do you research that, right? Because right now it's more of an inclination. I'm like, you feel something when you walk into a space, right? Mm-hmm. And that affects you, your physiology, right? And so when you think about, especially now, we're all spending so much time at home. And I was like, why do I have this like visceral need to like kind of cultivate my physical environment and like this office, right? This office being designed to support my creativity makes me more creative. Mm-hmm. Why does Dwell do a series on like inside the offices of the most creative people? Because I think we innately understand that there's like something to like physical environment that like makes us think or helps us express who we are. And I just don't know how to research it.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't that be a little bit of feng shui? A
little bit.
But a little bit too of, A, what do you value? And I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking of colors. Like I feel like people resonate with different colors and that certainly has a huge effect on your environment.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, I'm excited to read your book.
Thank you. And watch your TV show. Thank you. And my,
I have a
design partner that I, started working with in LA because I've been taking on clients. Just like, quite frankly, I started a design business because my husband's like, no more spending on your rental.
And so, amazing.
Yeah. So I have like people that like reach out and ask for help, whatever. So I'm like, fine, I'll just like start charging you and do e-design. And so it's like taken on a life of its own. So we started yourspacemadegreat.com. It's like the most basic website ever. But I was trying to think about like, as we take on e-design clients and we're niching down on like couples, like co-decorating, and a lot of single men that have a lot of money, but have never thought to like invest in their space until like they're forced to stay home. So how do we use our client base to learn about some of this? So as we were talking about the feng shui thing, you inspired me. I'm like, I wonder if there's like a pre-post, like kind of exploratory research we could do. That's like your just sense of well-being, like how you feel in a space before versus after you kind of intentionally design it to, you know, support your values, support your well-being.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Lauren, the Modern Astrologer?
No.
Lauren? I will definitely connect you guys. She does a little bit of feng shui things, but then she's also an astrologer. So it could be interesting too to, yeah, dive into people's birth charts as well. I think there's a lot to this.
There's so much to that. And like the love corner stuff in feng shui, like plants. And mm-hmm. My friend Erica, literally, our friend, mutual friend Morgan, her mom is a feng shui expert. And Erica was telling her that she was like kind of having some like bad love luck. And Morgan was like, well, that's because you've got a bunch of dead plants in your love corner. Like you got to clear that energy out. And Erica was mind blown. She's like, what? So they like, they clear all of her dead plants out. When I was in New York, Erica and I go to the plant store and she tells me like, she's like, Morgan told me I had to get all my dead plants out of my love corner. We've got to get some like really good live plants for my love corner or I'm like screwed. So we were laughing about it, right? Like I was like flying plants from like my Marriott coffee trays to New York for her. And we were just like helping this love corner flourish. And now she's like, you know, in a like super happy relationship that maybe would have happened anyways, but it was a thing. And we like had so much joy over just like cultivating this space in her home that was like about this intention of what she wanted to bring to fruition in her life. And there's something there.
Intention, like you said, like so much of it comes back to intention. And that's also your mindset.
Your mindset. Totally. And that idea of your thoughts actually produce your reality. Everything about your life is produced by your thoughts. And so if you have high quality, positive thoughts, you have a high quality, positive life, period, mm-hmm. full stop. And the opposite. If you're like a negative, angry person, you're going to attract negative, angry stuff into your life.
We're ending the podcast there. Like literally, there's nothing else that needs to be said. 100%.
100%. Full stop. Nothing left to be said.
we all need a journal about this and just reflect on all of the words that you have shared with us today. Honestly, this has been so fun. I can talk to you for hours.
Oh my God, truly. Likewise.
Shout yourself out though. Where can girls find you? All the links that we need to know that we can link up with the show notes.
Yeah. So I think easiest place to get in touch is via DM on Instagram at Colleen Bordeaux. If you're interested in the Growth Incubator, it's just at Growth Incubator.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun. It's so fun to have you in my house, in my office.
So great. So great.
So great.
Thank you all for listening. Make sure to hit Colleen up and schedule those calls with her. Have a beautiful day, everyone. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Charge Girls. Good morning. Yes, I'm talking to you. It's time to get charged up, cause this day is anew. The sky says hi and it's bluer than blue. The sun is shining and all the birds are chirping too. Today is the best day to be alive. The miracles appear once you open up your eyes. Surprise! Time to keep living your dreams. So get up and join the rest of your charge team.